To WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers for Italian airline Alitalia have begun a hunger strike to protest plans to shave 5,000 jobs. Alitalia announced on Monday that it intends to cut more than a quarter of its workforce and split into two companies to save the equivalent of $1.2 billion American dollars. The majority state-owned carrier said that if the unions do not agree to this current proposal by September 15th, the company could face liquidation. The Cub Union, which represents more than 600 ground service and maintenance workers, have announced a hunger strike and are considering blocking Alitalia's main hub in Rome. The airline has responded to the potential action, saying it could result in the immediate shutdown of the company.
In a report released on Tuesday, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office stated the U.S. federal deficit is predicted to skyrocket to a record $422 billion. Adjusted for inflation, this is the highest annual shortfall since World War II. Betsy Lender Wright, Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy, doesn't believe a deficit in general is such a bad thing.
We can run average deficits of about 2% of the gross domestic product indefinitely without it causing any drag on the economy. This is more than twice that. We're now approaching 5%. So that is definitely a dangerous level of debt. That's going to hold back the growth of the economy and the ability of the federal government to spend money on anything else.
And according to Wright, the money isn't being spent on building schools, roads, and America's future infrastructure.
This deficit was wrapped up by giving large tax cuts to wealthy people and corporations who really didn't need it, and by spending a lot of money on a very messy war.
Currently, the Bush administration is borrowing $1 for every $5 it spends.
In other airline news, the pilots at U.S. Airways have voted against putting a management-backed cost-cutting package up for a vote. The package would have asked for $295 million in concessions from the pilots in an attempt to cut annual labor costs by $800 million. If a solution is not found by September 15th, the airline could be forced to file for bankruptcy a second time or liquidate its assets. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The wage gap between CEOs and their workers has once again begun to rise after 2 years of narrowing. United for a Fair Economy reports that the CEO pay to worker pay ratio reached 301 to 1 in 2003, up from 282 to 1 in 2002. UFE also reports that if the national minimum wage kept pace with the increase of CEO pay since 1990, it would be at $15.76 per hour, not the current $5.15 per hour.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I had survived two previous rounds of layoffs, and then the third round got me. They wiped out my whole department. I was forced to stop paying credit card payments. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to be rushed to the hospital for an emergency appendectomy, for which I'm not insured. How can we be the only westernized country without national health care? I can't believe that this is the best we can do. There's got to be a better way. I'm voting for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
In a moment of theological reflection, Woody Allen once declared, "I believe there is something out there watching us. Unfortunately, it's the government." Woody's little joke has become today's chilling reality as the Bush-Ashcroft regime has imposed measure after measure of new autocratic police power to keep watch over we the people. All of this has been done under the guise of fighting terrorists, but the government's focus increasingly is shifting from them to us. The latest example is the FBI's heavy-handed push to harass, intimidate, and suppress ordinary citizens who seek to protest governmental or corporate policies. Prior to the national conventions of both the Republican and Democratic parties, the so-called Justice Department dispatched federal agents to at least six states to trail and grill potential protesters. As one young protester put it, the government agents were trying to, quote, let us know that, hey, we're watching you. This repressive knock on the door by authorities is not merely directed at targets known to be plotting criminal activity, but at citizens who were simply planning to attend legitimate protests. Ashcroft himself asserts that these people might perhaps possibly could have the potential to do something criminal, or that they might perhaps possibly could know someone who could do so. The Justice Department's infamous Office of Legal Policy okayed this vague, big brotherish assault on our individual liberty by declaring that any chilling of the right to dissent would be outweighed by the need for order. Of course, bullying autocrats have always donned the dark cloak of order to rationalize their repression. The Bush-Ashcroft use of FBI snoops to intimidate today's dissenters is not about preventing crime, but about preventing protest. This is Jim Hightower saying, to protest their crude attempt to lock down protest, call the ACLU, 212-549-2500.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, get your coat, Mom, we're going for a drive. She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Vladimir Putin is a little upset with the Bush administration. We are talking to the Chechens and encouraging him to negotiate with the folks who killed all those kids in the school. And he's saying, well, why don't you go over and negotiate with Osama bin Laden then? This administration can't even keep their allies together. I mean, it's really a tragedy. I mean, it's really a tragedy. And it continues here. Now we've got Dick Cheney saying, vote for us or die. Excuse me. Vote for us or die. It's, here's actually exactly how he said it.
It's absolutely essential that 8 weeks from today on November 2nd, we make the right choice. Because if we make the wrong choice, then the danger is that we'll get hit again.
Yeah, if you vote for the other guys, you're going to die.
That we'll be hit in a way that will be devastating from the standpoint of the United States.
Yeah, we're all going to die.
What he said to the American people,
says John Edwards in response,
was if you go to the polls in November and elect anyone other than us, then and another terrorist attack occurs, it's your fault.
It's your fault, you, the voters. And John Edwards has some thoughts on that.
This is un-American.
Yeah, it's not just un-American. It's almost un-Nazi. I mean, it's outrageous. What you're seeing here is the synthesis of a group of people who absolutely believe this Faustian, Machiavellian notion that the ends justify the means, that terrorism is just fine as long as it's being, as long as terror is being foisted upon the American people by the administration itself. Some of you probably didn't hear in the third hour of our program yesterday the little clip one of the folks in our chat room put together of excerpts from George W. Bush's speech at the Republican National Convention last Thursday night.
Be afraid, September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists. September the 11th. Danger. Doomed. Danger. Doomed killers. Be afraid. Evil. The world will drift toward tragedy. Tragedy. May God bless you.
It's okay to terrify Americans.
Evil darkness.
And it just goes on and on and on. Anyhow, and a synthesis between these guys who are just absolutely promoting terror.
Evil God, evil. We are staying on the.
And their economic agenda, the neocon economic agenda, which is destroy democracy, destroy democratic governments.
Yeah. America. Nuclear weapons. Iraq was a gathering threat, and Al-Qaeda was largely unchallenged as it planned attacks. Free Afghanistan, terror. Pakistan, terrorists. Saudi Arabia, Libya, weapons programs. Saddam Hussein, terror. Weapons of mass destruction.
Well, enough. Anyhow, vote for us or die. The message of Dick Cheney yesterday, the subtext, really, to George W. Bush's speech last week.
Saddam Hussein, God. Murderous regimes of Saddam Hussein.
There's another minute and a half of this here. These are just the clips, right? Just the outtakes.
The various terrorist enemies we're facing in Iraq, the evil terrorists. We are defeating the terrorists doing battle in Afghanistan and Iraq. The resurrection of the evil terrorists. Saddam Hussein's secret police.
The intersection between these folks who are just absolutely ends justify the means, tell lies, do whatever is necessary, scare the absolute living bejesus out of people in order to either prevent them from going to the polls, discourage them from going to the polls, or get them to vote for their guy, for Bush and Cheney, on the one hand. And this radical, this is not conservative, by the way, but they call it conservative, and so I'll call it conservative. They've really hijacked the word. And there are a few conservatives like Pat Buchanan who are starting to protest with his new book out. But in any case, this radical conservative ideology that in many ways tracks back to classical conservative ideology. Edmund Burke, the 18th century British, philosopher among other things, who said, and father of conservative thought, who suggested that it's fine for a hairdresser to have the profession of hairdresser, but it does violence to society if he's allowed to participate in governance. The old conservative notion of classes and orders, of hierarchy and lineage, of the royal ascension, of handing down from one generation to the next power and privilege. And thus, let's do away with the death tax, because when people die, if they have a dynasty, that dynasty must be perpetuated. This was not an idea the founders were fond of. That's why there are no dynasties left over from the era of 1776 to 1880. None. Not one. And this is an agenda that these guys have just been promoting all over the planet, not just the Bush administration. I mean, they're just one face of this. It's the elder Bush, you know, he talked about the New World Order. This is just that going on. By the way, welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, tomhartman.com. The website, you can drop into our chat room. Already filling up with folks. If you want to rant back at me, call in, chat in, whatever you'd like. We see now the cons growing in influence all around the world. Reports from the BBC yesterday that the BBC has invited three of the world's largest media groups to discuss possible bids for BBC Worldwide. They're going to privatize parts of the BBC. The biggest one, of course, was Iraq. And you'll recall, those of you who listen to the program regularly, some months ago, when the Iraqi Constitution came out and Bremer's orders came out, I read to you a number of the articles from the Constitution here on the air, and we discussed their significance. Naomi Klein has done a marvelous job of summarizing this in a piece in the September issue of Harper's Magazine, basically making the same points that I was, although she went over and looked at what was happening. And this is the great neocon experiment, the great libertarian experiment, the great Ayn Rand experiment, the great Milton Friedman experiment, the great Ronald Reagan experiment. Get government, completely out of the way and just let the corporations run everything. And won't it be wonderful? Won't it be wonderful? And in fact, what happened when they got government out of the way is you had chaos, you had looting, you had... and have nationalism. We now have, there are now at least five separate identifiable factions that are all shooting at us now. Over 1,000 Americans dead. I think it was Danziger's cartoon yesterday. How do you ask a man to be the 1,000th man to die for a political campaign? You know, it's John Kerry coming out very, very clearly and very strongly about this yesterday.
He even used the same words Howard Dean did.
This is Bill. This is George
back
first.
When he supposedly disagreed with him. No matter how many times Senator Kerry flip-flops.
Yeah, right. And then Kerry...
of all the wrong choices that President Bush has made, the most catastrophic choice is the mess that he has made in Iraq.
This is a position that John Kerry has been holding all along. All along. And, you know, it's very unfortunate he said he would vote again to grant the president the authority because he, and as he said, he wouldn't have prosecuted it the way he did. He wouldn't probably have even gone to war. He didn't go to so far as to say that. He's trying to play down the middle. But what he clearly was saying was, you know, if that's the kind of pressure it takes to get the UN inspectors in there, then that's the kind of pressure that he would have been in favor of. But what Bush has done is just completely over the top. Completely over the top. 1,000 of our soldiers dead now. 1,002, I believe it was, as of this morning. This is an absolute tragedy. It is Vietnam revisited. And for the same bizarre reasons. I mean, we're going to go into Vietnam. We're going to stabilize. We're going to... the domino theory. Remember the domino theory? Those of you who are old enough. If Vietnam falls, then all the rest of Southeast Asia goes. Now they're saying, well, if we can stabilize Iraq, it'll stabilize the rest of the Middle East. Right. It worked real good in Vietnam, didn't it? 1-866-889-8894. Pat in Oklahoma's on the line. Hey, Pat, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. I'm wondering if you can put a link on your website to the collage recording that you just played. It'd be nice to have that.
I think I still have the link and email, so yes. It's actually from the Iraqi goat herder, one of the folks in our chat room who did this thing, and I'll do that. I'll put it in the on the message board after I get off the air today.
Thank you, Tom. Rant on.
Okay, will do, Pat. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Thanks for listening to us there in Oklahoma. Rant on. The tone of Bremer's tenure, Naomi Klein writes, was set with his first major act on the job. He fired 500,000 state workers, most of them soldiers, but also doctors, nurses, teachers, publishers, and printers. What was their crime, these people? Why did they lose their jobs? Why did they lose their pensions? Why did they lose their ability to make a living? Well, because their employer was not a multinational corporation. That was their sin. Next, Klein notes, Bremer flung open the country's borders to absolutely unrestricted imports. No tariffs, no duties, no inspections, no taxes. All of a sudden, everybody in Iraq who made anything, any kind of consumer good, people make bowls, people make pots, people make, you know, just on and on and on. Suddenly they were competing with, you know, cheap stuff from all over the planet. They couldn't compete. They didn't have time to build factories to make this stuff. They didn't have time to get up to speed. They didn't have time to develop market share. Instead, the multinational companies came in and ate their lunch. Even small entrepreneurs were driven out of business. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, what are your thoughts on this beautiful Wednesday here, the 8th of September?
Well, hi, Tom. I'm getting a sickening feeling that the big issues are being skipped in the campaign. I was watching, I mean, of all places, Scarborough Country last night, and they were going over Chris Matthews I forgot his name, that old right-winger, Pat Buchanan, were on there. They're bringing up, like, they were amazed that no one is talking about how the increase in all the major programs, I mean, the Department of Education, Department of, you know, all these departments, the major ones, about eight of them, since the Republicans took over, their budgets have gone up from about 80 to over 100%. And nobody's talking about this. Without cutting spending, these tax cuts are nothing but a deferred tax on our children and grandchildren.
Yeah, amen, Glenn. And nobody's talking about it. Nobody's going to talk about it unless the Kerry campaign gets out there. Let's hope they do. 20 minutes past it. Well, I'm talking about it here, too. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I get up every morning and ignore the global warming. Head out to the Oval Office, start my day. I keep my donors all protected so I can be re-elected. Give them access just as long as they pay.
It's the Bush song.
And to the corporate crooks who keep cooking up the books, we make sure we look the other way.
Always,
the
always.
The laws are just to break, long as I still get my take. My war chest keeps on growing each day. And I've been taking care of business.
And that's what they're doing over in Iraq, too, taking care of business. Order 37 lowers Iraq's corporate tax from 40% to a flat 15%. Flat tax on people, too, at 15%. The new neocon wonder, ain't it great? Yeah, Order 39 allowed foreign corporations to own 100% of Iraqi assets outside of the natural resource, say, outside of oil. Even better, investors can take 100% of the profits out of the country, not pay any taxes at all, leave nothing behind. This is called strip mining. These are the kind of rules that all the multinationals are asking all around the world, and the only way that they can get it is to drive a country into debt and then go in with the IMF, like they did in Argentina, and say, hey, you guys, you owe us so much money, you know? You're going to have to do something called structural readjustment. Little shock therapy here. Yeah, well, I don't think most Americans realize that Al Sistani, the highly regarded elder Iranian, actually, who came to Iraq, who is the head of the head of all of Iraq's Shiites, and Al Sadr, the young guy, you know, with his Mehdi army and all that, both of them, their objections to what's going on over there have to do with this constitution and these rules that would turn Iraq overnight into a neocon, libertarian, super conservative. In the old days, it was called feudalism. Two centuries ago, it was called feudalism. In my grandparents or in my parents' days, it was called fascism state, where the corporations run the show. And that is what Sistani and that is what Sadr have been complaining and contesting all along, outspokenly. Everybody in Iraq understands that. Nobody in America gets it. It's absolutely mind-boggling to me. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've got a caller. I know you're in San Diego. My computer just crashed, and so I lost your name there. Refresh.
Oh, it's Vicki.
Hey, Vicki. Sorry about that. What's up?
Yes. First, I wanted to say thank you. You were my first breath of fresh air here in San Diego because we just have a barrage of pro-Bush radio talk shows, and they're mainly hate-filled. And I realize from listening to your program now for about a month that I am extremely uninformed. But I did want to ask you, and I'm definitely for Kerry. I wanted to ask you how did he vote when he voted for there are different views on it. How did he vote when he voted to give President Bush the right to was it for an investigation? Bush keeps saying that he voted for the war.
Well, the bill that Kerry voted for, and again, I disagree with his vote. I just have to say right up front, I think it was it was a mistake. But nonetheless, the what he voted for, that bill said that before the president could commence any kind of violent activity against Iraq, he had to certify to the United States Congress in writing that, number one, Iraq did possess weapons of mass destruction, number two, that those weapons were about to be used on Americans or American interests or American allies, and number three, what was the number three? Something like that. Yeah. Oh, and that all options of with regard to the United Nations and other things had been exhausted. That all other options had been exhausted. He had to demonstrate that. And Bush actually wrote a letter saying that to Congress. It was a lie. And you know, Kerry is just pointing that out. Vicki, I got to move along here.
Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers for Italian airline Alitalia have begun a hunger strike to protest plans to shave 5,000 jobs. Alitalia announced on Monday that it intends to cut more than a quarter of its workforce and split into two companies to save the equivalent of $1.2 billion American dollars. The majority state-owned carrier said that if the unions do not agree to this current proposal by September 15th, the company could face liquidation. The Cub Union, which represents more than 600 ground service and maintenance workers, have announced a hunger strike and are considering blocking Alitalia's main hub in Rome. The airline has responded to the potential action, saying it could result in the immediate shutdown of the company.
In a report released on Tuesday, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office stated the U.S. federal deficit is predicted to skyrocket to a record $422 billion. Adjusted for inflation, this is the highest annual shortfall since World War II. Betsy Lender Wright, Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy, doesn't believe a deficit in general is such a bad thing.
We can run average deficits of about 2% of the gross domestic product indefinitely without it causing any drag on the economy. This is more than twice that. We're now approaching 5%. So that is definitely a dangerous level of debt. That's going to hold back the growth of the economy and the ability of the federal government to spend money on anything else.
And according to Wright, the money isn't being spent on building schools, roads, and America's future infrastructure.
This deficit was wrapped up by giving large tax cuts to wealthy people and corporations who really didn't need it, and by spending a lot of money on a very messy war.
Currently, the Bush administration is borrowing $1 for every $5 it spends.
In other airline news, the pilots at U.S. Airways have voted against putting a management-backed cost-cutting package up for a vote. The package would have asked for $295 million in concessions from the pilots in an attempt to cut annual labor costs by $800 million. If a solution is not found by September 15th, the airline could be forced to file for bankruptcy a second time or liquidate its assets. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The wage gap between CEOs and their workers has once again begun to rise after 2 years of narrowing. United for a Fair Economy reports that the CEO pay to worker pay ratio reached 301 to 1 in 2003, up from 282 to 1 in 2002. UFE also reports that if the national minimum wage kept pace with the increase of CEO pay since 1990, it would be at $15.76 per hour, not the current $5.15 per hour.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Slinger riding on the range. I'm white, educated, and I
We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists. September the 11th. Danger. Doom. Danger. Doom.
And welcome back.
Be afraid. The world will drift toward tragedy. Tragedy. May God bless you. Evil God. Iraq. Afghanistan.
27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Continuing danger of terrorism. Be afraid. September the 11th.
Great music of George W. Hey, the one, you know, that in response to Vicky's call from San Diego, the letter that John Dean, that letter that George W. Bush wrote to Congress certifying that all options had been exhausted, that Iraq possessed weapons, and that they intended to immediately use them against the United States. That letter, John Dean, the former counsel to Richard Nixon, the lawyer who, those of you who are old enough to remember Watergate, there was this one guy inside the Nixon White House, John Dean, who was Nixon's lawyer. He was counsel to the president. And his official lawyer, his you know, the White House lawyer. And when he figured out what was going on with Haldeman and Ehrlichman and John Mitchell and these guys and Liddy and Hunt and, you know, the whole bunch of them, when he figured out what was going on, he went into the president's office. He says, sir, there's a cancer on the presidency. And he wasn't willing to go along and play along, and so they bounced him out, and they started slandering him. It's like the Bush family stuff, you know, against John McCain. You know, one of the stories came out that John Dean's wife had been a prostitute. She never had been. She was just very pretty. But you know, they were smearing him to try and destroy his credibility because in advance. He had not yet gone to the press or anything. He had simply told Nixon he wasn't going to go along with the cover-up. And he never really, I mean, no, he ended up testifying before the Watergate committee, Sam Ervin, Senator, good old Senator Sam. See, the Democrats held the Senate when Nixon got reelected. In, what was it, 72? On the reelected... On the strength of saying that he had a secret plan to end the war in Vietnam, by the way. But anyhow, John Dean, who was there, saw the whole thing, has written an entire book basically about this letter that George W. Bush wrote to Congress saying, yes, we have to invade Iraq now because all options have been exhausted, which was not the case. The UN still, Hans Blix was still out there saying, you know, we've been looking like crazy and we have looked all, we don't see any evidence of any weapons. We're increasingly thinking there aren't any. And France and Germany and Russia and pretty much the rest of the world, they're all going, looks like maybe there's no weapons there. And members of Congress are starting to say, you know, gee, maybe there's no weapons there. Sure, it looks like that. And what happens? Well, so anyhow, Bush writes this letter. John Dean writes an entire book that is mostly about this letter. We had him on this program a few weeks ago, in which he says, the title of the book sums it all up, Worse Than Watergate. He says, this is a crime, an impeachable crime, worse than anything Richard Nixon did. Nothing Richard Nixon did that related to Watergate anyway directly resulted in the death of Americans. Now, yes, he stretched out the Vietnam War. You can argue, I suppose, that he inherited it from LBJ, who bore equal complicity in it with his phony Gulf of Tonkin resolution and all that that got us into it. But Dean saying very clearly, now this is phony, guys, and this is wrong. This is absolutely wrong. And I suppose there are, you know, occasionally moments of comic relief. You know, George W. Yesterday again, you know, running around saying not pointing out the reality that insurance companies were heavily invested in the .com industry. And over the last 4 years, as the bubble burst in the stock market, the insurance industry, which sits on hundreds of billions of dollars, huge, mind-boggling, trillions of dollars, actually, you know, if you look at the worldwide insurance industry, sit on this money, and they invest it, just like George W. wants us to do with Social Security. And what happened? Well, they lost a fortune when the market went down. And they still haven't made much of it back. So what they do? They raise their insurance rates on doctors in particular. Lawsuits account for somewhere between 1% and 2% of the total take on the insurance increase. The rest of it is because the insurance companies were losing money in the stock market. But George Bush conveniently ignored that. This is our comic relief for the
Many good docs are getting out of business. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
Isn't that a shame? Too many OBGYNs can't practice their love with women all across this country. Yeah, it's a real problem here. 1-866-889-8894, 21 minutes before the hour. Steve in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to call and remind all the neocons out there that they only have three more shopping days till September 11th to get their presents for each other.
To celebrate the unveiling of Osama bin Laden, perhaps, or something like that?
Yeah, and whatever presents they give each other on that day.
Yeah.
I knew like the convention was just going to be a total disgrace, and I wasn't let down. I thought it was pretty disgusting how many times they brought it up, like as if we could even forget that day. I mean, I remember what it smelled like, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they ask us not to forget. It's like, come on, guys, we're not going to forget that, you know. It's just.
It's got nothing to do with forgetting, Steve. It's got nothing to do with forgetting. It's got to do with embedding the idea of vote for us or you'll die into the context of a strong emotional experience. Psychologists have found over the years, and this is something that has not been lost on the advertising industry, that if you can tie a strong emotional reaction to any kind of message, that message gets remembered longer and has more impact. And so, you know, guess what? We got what we got. And we got Bush's, you know, RNC speech, you know, where he just goes on and on.
Terror, weapons of mass destruction. September the 11th. The Almighty God, evil God. In Saddam Hussein, we saw a threat. Terror, threat.
Another thing I wanted to say is that we need to take that Purple Heart Band-Aid of theirs and pin it on their chest. You know, I thought that was pretty disgusting, too.
Yeah, I'd pin it on their backsides.
Say, this is yours now, GOP. You brought this. You smarmy jerks, you brought this up. This is yours. You live with it.
Yeah, well, this is their response.
If I was in a campaign, I would do that to them.
Yeah, and they respond.
Terrorists. Saddam Hussein's secret police. Sadistic punishment. Mass graves. The evil terrorists. Radical ideology of hate. Kill the enemy.
Yeah, kill, hate.
Be afraid.
See, this is, I'm telling you, this guy gets really articulate when he is trying to scare the bejesus out of people. And Steve, thanks for the call.
I
appreciate
Tom.
It. Yeah, good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number 19 minutes before the hour. Let's move along a little bit here. I think I've made my point. I encourage you to go out and pick up the current issue of Harper's and read this article by Naomi Klein, because she did such a marvelous job of researching and laying out what we've been talking about here on this program ever since Paul Bremer first started his campaign, and bringing it to the consciousness of everybody in the United States who doesn't listen to this show. So, and you know, God bless her. Her book, No Logo, and you know, her many columns on commondreams.org. I highly regard her work. By the way, I have a piece on commondreams.org today. You can check it out. About how do we respond to Republican smears? No need to revisit it because it's stuff I talked about a few days ago. But anyhow, California Attorney General Bill Lockyer said on Tuesday, this from Reuters, that he would sue Diebold. Yep, it's the electronic voting machine maker Diebold. They're going to be sued by California, state of California, on charges that they defrauded the state with false claims about their products. They had previously actually been looking at criminal prosecution of Diebold. I guess then they realized you can't put a corporation in jail. So now they're going to sue them for fraud. You can get money out of a corporation. Secretary of State Kevin Shelley has said Diebold deceived California with aggressive marketing that led to the installation of touchscreen voting systems that were not tested or approved nationally or in California. The same kinds of machines that produce no paper trail cannot be audited that brought Mr. Hagel, Senator, good old Senator Hagel, to power in Nebraska after he stepped down as head of what is now ESNS, the voting machine company based in Nebraska, Chuck Hagel, and ran for the Senate and miraculously won a landslide, the vote being counted on his own machines. These, the machines that were in place all across the state of Georgia, when the Democratic governor and Democratic Senator Max Cleland were clearly ahead by 5, 6, 7 points in the polls the day before the election, and somehow lost by the exact same proportion. To this day, I tell you, I believe, I can't prove it. I'm not charging anybody with a crime. I'm just telling you my personal belief, my suspicion that somehow, and frankly, that somehow that vote got hacked. And I got to say, I don't think it was the voting machine companies. I really don't. I don't think they're that stupid. They really, you know, companies are in business to make money. They want their product to have a good reputation. They want to continue. Yeah, well, you could say, you know, some of these companies, one of the big companies was started by a family that believes that the Bible should replace the United States Constitution. That's how one of the two big voting machine companies came about. The other is headed up by good old Wally there, Diebold. I forget Wally's last name right at the moment, in Ohio, where he says, we're going to do everything we can to bring, to deliver this state to George W. Yeah, it was a campaign letter. He wasn't saying he's going to rig the voting machines. I know it made a lot of people neurotic, but the machines can be rigged. They can be hacked. On Topic A with Tina Brown on CNBC, Howard Dean and Bev Harris sat there on live television and in 90 seconds hacked a Diebold machine and changed the outcome of an election in a way that was absolutely untraceable. And they showed the world how to do it. I mean, they just sat right there and said, okay, here, you go to the drive C and you find this file. It's got this name. And you open this file in one of the spreadsheet programs. And you simply change this number here over to this number here. You close the file back up. And then you boot up the Diebold software again. And it goes looking at that file and goes, oh, those are the numbers, huh? 90 seconds, they hacked an election and changed the outcome. 90 seconds on live television 3 weeks ago. I'm amazed that didn't make national news. I thought for sure that, you know, there'd be people wailing about that one. By the way, don't forget, tonight apparently is going to be the 60 Minutes program in which former Secretary of State of Texas, Mr. Barnes, is going to come out and say that he's ashamed that he allowed himself to be manipulated by the Bush family to get George into the Champaign unit, Texas Air National Guard, thus A, having to bump somebody else, some other rich person's, rich family's son, got bumped and ended up in Vietnam, and maybe dead, and B, that this kind of thing was going on at all. You know, that if you were rich and powerful in Texas, there was no chance you'd go to Vietnam. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bob in California. Hey, Bob, where in California?
Simi Valley.
Ah, great. Beautiful, beautiful country. Hey, so what's up, Bob?
I just heard you mention about this being able to hack a voting machine. I hadn't heard that before, and it certainly ties in. Is it going to be possible at the end of election day that there's going to be chaos in a level that far exceeds anything that we saw 4 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's not only possible, I think in some states it's probable.
And it could go either way. I mean, if Kerry would win, I think the Bush administration or the Bush people would just climb on the same or claim the same fears that we are claiming now, that it was all fixed. What do you see as the potential of what might happen?
Well, it could be very messy. I mean, the ironic thing is that if any of these states that are entirely touchscreen voting machines, like Florida and Georgia, where there are no paper trails, and where, unlike California, where the state is saying, you know, we're not going to do this and suing and whatever. Here in Vermont, the Secretary of State, Deb Markowitz, has said, you know, we're not going to have these machines here. Thank you very much. Even though you're willing to give us, you know, millions of dollars to put them in, we're not going to do it. Federal dollars are being funneled through the states to go to these voting machine companies. It's really interesting that the conservatives and Republicans in particular have, you know, they're fighting against Rush Holt's bill, Congressman Rush Holt's bill, which has enough signatures actually to pass it through the House of Representatives. Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert won't let it out of committee. That would require a voter-verified paper ballot to be printed out by these machines. That it's almost like they kind of think that they've got it sewed up. And therefore, there hasn't been much paranoia on the right like there has been on the left. And it'll be real interesting if any of those states actually go to Kerry or to other Democrats, you know, how are the Republicans going to object to this when they have been fighting tooth and nail any kind of reform in this area? It's going to be real interesting. Bob, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you there. And I think that we could have, and this is why the Kerry campaign has already lined up literally thousands of lawyers all across the country, and of course the Bush campaign has done the same. Get ready for a wild ride, folks. 55 days to regime change. Tom Hartman here with you, 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Fogg for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Warming in the Arctic is having a dangerous impact on a native tradition. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Subsistence hunting remains a way of life in the far north. Author Charles Wolforth spent weeks on the Arctic ice with Eskimos during their annual hunt for bowhead whales.
The Nukak people on the North Slope have survived from time immemorial from the land. And even though they have a cash economy now, their whole culture and their real reason for being still rests on hunting the bowhead whale. And that's the center of their culture, and that's really the most important thing they care about spiritually and materially and socially.
Wolforth writes about his experience in his new book, The Whale and the Supercomputer. He says bowhead whales are plentiful. Ironically, it's the hunt that's in trouble.
The bowhead whale hunt has become very dangerous because it's done on the sea ice in the springtime, and the sea ice has become unpredictable. It's thinned by 40% in the last few decades, and it's become less anchored to the bottom.
Wolforth says the changing conditions affect the Inupiat whale hunters every moment they're on the ice.
I spent weeks with the hunters out on the ice in a constant state of anxiety as we were expecting disaster, fear of being crushed by moving icebergs or in fear of breaking off and floating out into the ocean. And then the day that I left, the ice did break off and 100 whalers floated out into the ocean and had to be rescued by helicopter, which was a very dangerous process that lasted all through the night.
Wolforth says no lives were lost, only some equipment went into the sea, but he says it illustrates how changing conditions are making it difficult for Native Alaskans to continue their traditional way of life. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So hey, there's a new American way. No one's serving those deserving, but there's less tax to pay. We abuse our might and mock the world as we say. Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
Yeah, welcome to the Neocon Paradise.
Don't mess with the U.S. of A.
Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Welcome back to our program. John Kerry, I got to say, I am not a Democrat, and I have traditionally never been particularly partisan. I personally agree with many more of the positions of Ralph Nader than I do with John Kerry, but there's no way on God's green earth that I would vote for Ralph Nader this year, or ever again, for that matter. And I fully intend to vote for John Kerry this year. That all said, he is really starting to speak to the issues that I think are important. And for example, this was I believe this is from yesterday. He starts out talking about health care, and then he gets into this rant about Social Security and privatization. I think they're both really worth hearing.
I am determined that when I am president, America will stop being the only industrial nation on this planet that doesn't yet accept that health care is not a privilege for the elected or the selected or the wealthy or the connected. Health care is a right for all Americans, and we're going to make it available to all Americans.
Now, that's an extremely radical statement by American standards. Every other industrialized country in the world agrees with John Kerry, by the way. But historically, we have said, no. And then he goes even a step farther, I think in talking about Social Security.
Because of George W. Bush's wrong choices, we're spending $200 billion in Iraq while we're running up the biggest deficits in American history, the biggest deficits announced yesterday, and the biggest debt. We've added more debt under George Bush, more debt to the national debt of our nation than we added from George Washington to Ronald Reagan. And that threatens Social Security, and that's what Alan Greenspan told us the other day. In fact, they're raiding the Social Security Trust Fund
as we speak
in order to pay for their mistakes in Iraq. And at that convention in New York last week, guess what? George Bush said he actually had a new idea. And you know what it is?
Yeah.
You know what his new idea is?
I hate these rhetorical
questions.
It's
actually the bad old idea of privatizing Social Security and cutting your benefits. That's the wrong choice, wrong direction, wrong leadership for America.
Yeah, well said, John. It's so good to see that he's finally getting out there and speaking up. 55 days to go. Come on, John, you can get out there and, what was it, George Sr. said, kick a little Baghdad butt, kick a little Bush. Well, anyway, it's the Tom Hartman Program, putting the con in conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004.
Call. Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers for Italian airline Alitalia have begun a hunger strike to protest plans to shave 5,000 jobs. Alitalia announced on Monday that it intends to cut more than a quarter of its workforce and split into two companies to save the equivalent of $1.2 billion American dollars. The majority state-owned carrier said that if the unions do not agree to this current proposal by September 15th, the company could face liquidation. The Cub Union, which represents more than 600 ground service and maintenance workers, have announced a hunger strike and are considering blocking Alitalia's main hub in Rome. The airline has responded to the potential action, saying it could result in the immediate shutdown of the company.
In a report released on Tuesday, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office stated the U.S. federal deficit is predicted to skyrocket to a record $422 billion. Adjusted for inflation, this is the highest annual shortfall since World War II. Betsy Lender Wright, Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy, doesn't believe a deficit in general is such a bad thing.
We can run average deficits of about 2% of the gross domestic product indefinitely without it causing any drag on the economy. This is more than twice that. We're now approaching 5%. So that is definitely a dangerous level of debt. That's going to hold back the growth of the economy and the ability of the federal government to spend money on anything else.
And according to Wright, the money isn't being spent on building schools, roads, and America's future infrastructure.
This deficit was wrapped up by giving large tax cuts to wealthy people and corporations who really didn't need it, and by spending a lot of money on a very messy war.
Currently, the Bush administration is borrowing $1 for every $5 it spends.
In other airline news, the pilots at U.S. Airways have voted against putting a management back cost-cutting package up for a vote. The package would have asked for $295 million in concessions from the pilots in an attempt to cut annual labor costs by $800 million. If a solution is not found by September 15th, the airline could be forced to file for bankruptcy a second time or liquidate its assets. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The wage gap between CEOs and their workers has once again begun to rise after 2 years of narrowing. United for a Fair Economy reports that the CEO pay to worker pay ratio reached 301 to 1 in 2003, up from 282 to 1 in 2002. UFE also reports that if the national minimum wage kept pace with the increase of CEO pay since 1990, it would be at $15.76 per hour, not the current $5.15 per hour.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I had survived two previous rounds of layoffs, and then the third round got me. They wiped out my whole department. I was forced to stop paying credit card payments. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to be rushed to the hospital for an emergency appendectomy, for which I'm not insured. How can we be the only westernized country without national health care? I can't believe that this is the best we can do. There's got to be a better way. I'm voting for John Kerry.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
It's always a hoot to hear corporate lobbyists wailing to the high heavens about the scourge of frivolous lawsuits, demanding that Congress bar people from suing them. But guess who files the biggest number of frivolous lawsuits in America? Corporations. They sue their competitors, consumers, shareholders, critics, the media, public interest groups. They'll sue their own mama just to squeeze out another dime. For an example of litigious corporate absurdity, come to Lavernia, Texas, and hoist a cool one with the good folks who are regulars at the True Blue Texas Roadhouse. Located 25 miles east of San Antonio, this rural bar serves up beer, chips, country music, and genuine Texas atmosphere. It's in a corrugated metal building that used to be a garage. It's the real deal. But the True Blue Texas Roadhouse has been sued by the corporate lawyers of a national restaurant chain calling itself Texas Roadhouse. This outfit, which operates 165 restaurants in 30 states, wrote to Doug Bodie in Lavernia, claiming that Bodie's Texas True Blue Texas Roadhouse was violating the chain's trademark name and, get this, deceiving the consuming public into thinking this little bar in Lavernia is part of the chain. Now, get this. The chain has no Texas roots whatsoever. It began in Indiana and is headquartered in Kentucky. It dresses up its bars with Texas memorabilia, but it's a fake, profiting on the good name and spirit of genuine Texas roadhouses. Texas is where we live, says one of Bodie's regulars, which is way more than the plastic chain can claim. Bodie himself says, I'm just trying to make a living. For God's sake, I'm a Texas bar. Why can't I use that name? This is Jim Hightower saying, well, why can't he? If you'd like to tell the national chain where to go and tell it to leave Lavernia's genuine roadhouse alone, call the CEO, 502-426-9984.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. We passed a milestone yesterday, an unfortunate, tragic milestone. 1,002 people, American soldiers dead in Iraq. Ah, great, we got Larry on. I want to talk with you about the Supreme Court here, and we've got Larry D. Kramer. He's the Russell D. Niles Professor of Law at New York University, recently named Dean of the Stanford Law School. And he has a marvelous new book out called The People Themselves, Popular Constitutionalism and Judicial Review. Larry Kramer, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, thanks. I'm actually now officially at Stanford.
Oh, great. Okay.
No longer the Russell D. Niles Professor at NYU.
Okay. Hey, you've become a major big shot. That's wonderful. Yeah, one of the things that I learned from spending some time with your book, and I can't say that I've read every word in it, but I have spent a fair amount of time with it, was, in fact, it seems essentially the core message of it, was that the Marbury versus Madison case in 1803 when Thomas Jefferson was president and John Marshall, who was the second cousin, I believe, of John Adams. Adams had put him on the Supreme Court, basically packed the Supreme Court with Federalists. And the anti-Federalist, now you call him a Democrat, Jefferson had inherited this. In Marbury versus Madison, the conventional wisdom is that the court basically took upon itself the right to overturn legislation based on its constitutionality. In fact, Thomas Jefferson wrote right after this ruling, right after Marbury the ruling, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to Spencer Roane, who was the son-in-law of Patrick Henry and a good friend of his. He says, "If this opinion be sound, then indeed our Constitution is a complete felo de se, legally a suicide, for intending to establish three departments, coordinate and independent, that they might check and balance one another. It has given, according to this opinion, to one of them alone, the right to prescribe rules for the government of the others, and to that one, too, that is unelected by and independent of the nation." And then he really flips out. This is still his letter to Roane. He says, "The Constitution on this hypothesis is a mere thing of wax in the hands of the judiciary, which may then twist it and shape it into any form they please. It should be remembered," Jefferson said, "as an axiom of eternal truth in politics, that whatever power in any government is independent is absolute. Also, in theory only at first, while the spirit of the people is up, but in practice as fast as that relaxes. Independence can be trusted nowhere but with the people in mass. They are inherently independent of all but moral law. A judiciary independent of a king or executive is a good thing, but independent of the will of the nation is a solecism, at least in a republican government." Pardon the long quote there, but this, I mean, you know, Jefferson was basically concerned about this. Seems like people have been for a long, long time, and you're suggesting that really, in Marbury versus Madison, John Marshall didn't absolutely take that power for the Supreme Court. Or am I misinterpreting?
No. You're interpreting right. Just two quick corrections. One is Marshall was Jefferson's
cousins.
Not Adams, yeah.
Thank you.
Which makes it all the more ironic.
Right? Yes.
And the letter to Roane is many years later, because although Marshall in Marbury didn't make that claim, he does make it later on.
I see.
In
okay.
a case called McCulloch.
Okay.
Which is in 1819.
Okay.
So at that point, Jefferson was really upset about the ruling, but not about the judicial review part, because the position Marshall took with respect to the court in Marbury was in fact Jefferson's own position, which was that the court could of course say that it thinks the law is unconstitutional, but that its view on that wouldn't be final and binding on anybody else.
Then how did it become final and binding on everybody?
Well, in my view, it actually sort of didn't until basically the 1960s. I mean, there's been a seesawing battle back and forth, because there were always those who wanted the court to have final say over the meaning of the Constitution.
Right.
It's just they kept losing in politics every time they would push the position, and it went back and forth. There would be long periods when it was not an issue that anyone was paying attention to, because the court was, in fact, not pushing its own agenda. Whenever the court did push its agenda, they would get pushed back very hard. And then a combination of things after World War II and the kind of anomaly of the Warren Court created a situation in which this idea grew up really in the 60s.
Yeah, actually, wasn't it 58, Cooper versus Aaron?
57, yeah.
57, okay, yeah. So I remember when I was a kid, particularly around in Texas, but across the United States, actually, you would see these signs, these billboards that said "Impeach Earl Warren." There was this. You know, prior to Warren prior to the death of Kennedy, basically. In fact, there was, that's a digression about Kennedy. But in any case, there was this notion on the part of conservatives, apparently, for a long, long time, that judicial activism was acceptable. That is, let's not use
yes,
that phrase.
That's right.
Loaded.
That's right.
But yeah, the judicial
there still is.
Supremacy.
That has always been the conservative position, and still
right.
is. The conservative position, almost exclusively, not 100%, but for most conservatives, is and always has been that the court should have final say on the meaning of the Constitution. Where conservatives have gotten upset, of course, is the court's interpretation of the Constitution has been broader than they think it should be. But
right.
but in its proper domain. That's why conservatives don't repudiate the Rehnquist Court, which is way more activist than the Warren Court ever was.
Right, and that's why they wanted to impeach Warren, was not because he was interpreting the Constitution, but because he was interpreting it in a way that they didn't like.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's legit. I mean, it's that is to say, that's part of the point. The court, this is Marbury. This was what Jefferson thought. The court should have a say, but its say wouldn't be final and binding on everybody else. And if strong signals came back through the political system that the actual final interpreter, which is the community at large, had a different view, then the court should yield to that.
And yet now we have a case, Bush v. Gore, for example, the most recent one that in which the court really asserted an extraordinary power. You note that in the last time that a case that a presidential election was contested, there was a difference between the popular vote and the electoral vote, which was back in the 19th century, that all three branches of government got involved. And there was basically a court case. You can tell us the details.
Well, a commission. They actually created a special commission.
A commission, thank you. And that decided it. And that hasn't happened here. What has happened that the court has taken on this power? And do you think that something should be done to reverse it?
Well, I do. That was the point in writing the book. I mean, I think what happened was a combination of things. So, like I said, the conservative position was traditionally always in favor of strong judicial authority within the bounds that, you know, conservatives understood the Constitution to govern. The liberal position was always the opposite, right? The liberal position was always the anti-court position. And then World War II comes along and sort of popular democracy, you know, becomes disfavored because of fascism and communism and the way people react to mass publics. And we get this whole political culture in which essentially, you know, the view is elites have to govern the hoi polloi who are too stupid to govern for themselves.
Right.
And that pervades, you know.
Yeah,
then the Warren Court comes along and it gives liberals a reason to shift their traditional position. Suddenly they have a court they like, and the liberal position comes to embrace judicial supremacy. So now left and right have found one thing on which they agree. Right, which is that ordinary people can't be trusted to control the Constitution, and an elite has to control it, and so we'll still fight over who's going to sit on the court, but we'll all agree that the court should have final say. And you get 20 or 40 years of that across the political spectrum from the top, public opinion makers, and so forth. It just seeps into the political culture.
Even though it wasn't the intent of the founders, even though it wasn't the case during much of the history of the United States.
And not only was it not the intent of the founders, right, they would be appalled.
Yeah.
Not all, of course. Again, this is one of the interesting things that I found when I went back.
Hamilton probably would have liked it, you know.
Right.
The Adams probably would have liked
it. The spectrum loved it. And,
yeah,
of course, they're the ones that lost.
Yeah. And I mean, doesn't this ultimately all boil down to Burke, you know, for example, saying, it does society no harm if a man engages in the profession of being a hairdresser or some less honorable profession. However, when such a person is allowed to participate in governance, it commits a violence upon society. Burke, this argument between the traditional conservative worldview, which really you could define as pseudo-aristocracy, and Madison and Van Buren's notion of...
Right.
Democracy.
Right. Yeah, I think it, again, no, you know, it's not as though conservatives say they want a monarchy or anything, but it's sort of, you know, at the margins, which way do you want to cut it? And those who kind of fear what, you know, popular politics is going to do will always cut it in favor of judicial authority, and those who are a little more trusting go the other way, and that was the divide.
Well, this is where, in reading your writing, you suggest, I almost had the sense that maybe you hadn't pushed far enough. You were suggesting that modern aristocrats are not interested, and you just said it again. In hereditary empires, essentially, but there's this on the human level. There's this huge push on their part to eliminate inheritance taxes, which Jefferson wrote about. You know, the importance of empires not arising, personal wealth not arising in lineage in a way that could influence or harm society. And in fact, his first legislation he ever presented when he became in the House of Burgesses was to stop the laws of primogeniture. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah.
And also in the United States, up until the 1880s, 1890s, in most states, corporations couldn't exist for more than 40 years, and now they can live forever. Isn't this dynastic inheritance kind of thing?
Well, you know, the flavor's all different. You know what I mean? I mean, that is to say, certainly there are people who don't think the government should take money from the wealthy in order to redistribute it, right? That's where the fundamental push behind that goes, I think.
Or take it from the wealthy simply to prevent wealth from accumulating to the point where it can be a danger to the government itself.
Yeah, but I think at this point that's not what people think of when they think of the inheritance tax, even those who support it. Our world is so, you know, you've got to remember the founders were in a world where most of the world really believed it was impossible not to have a monarchy, so that they were pretty sure that
the government
would fail.
Yeah, Hamilton was arguing for that at the Constitutional Convention. But I mean, even today you have the situation where – well, I'm sorry, I interrupted you in mid-sentence.
No. It's just – like I said, I think the sort of modern political valence is a little different, although the consequence is the same, right? The consequence in the sense that policies that would have been opposed at that time because people saw them directly contributing to the creation of something like a real aristocracy, that's why they would have opposed it then. I think today it's a little different. The net result is the same. There clearly is a moneyed aristocracy with lots more power than the rest of us and lots more access and control to everything. There always has been. This makes it worse.
Yeah, and then which brings up, and we've only got about a minute and a half left here. I'm sorry, but the whole issue of corporate personhood, which you don't get into in your book, but I'm interested in your thoughts on the Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad case, in which the headnote says that corporations have access to human rights by virtue of the 14th Amendment, whereas the court ruling itself says the opposite. But Rehnquist in his Boston versus Bilotti dissent says back in 1886, this court, without benefit of discussion or argument, gave corporations personhood, and he thinks it's a bad idea. And the court actually didn't. Do you see that as a dimension of this?
Well, it's for what it's worth, it was a different kind of question from the one I was addressing. Also, so you know, headnotes are don't count.
And I know
you do go by the body of opinion. Yeah,
but that headquote has been cited 34 times now as precedent.
But, it's a little complicated only in the sense that the fight is really not about whether corporations are persons or not, but for what purposes. So there are some purposes for which they are and some they aren't. And, again, there'd probably be disagreement at the margins, let's say, which ones. But clearly for some purposes we want to treat them as something we call persons in the law.
Right.
Because, remember, what lies behind a corporation for the most part are still people.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. Larry Kramer, the author of The People Themselves, Popular Constitutionalism and Judicial Review. Mr. Kramer, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
It's 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now, 800-505-1546.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. That was Larry Kramer, our guest in the first segment here, talking about his new book, in which he is suggesting... The dean of law school at Stanford University suggesting that the Supreme Court actually isn't the ultimate arbiter of constitutional reality. Fascinating concept. The applications may seem rather didactic, but, well, in any case, it's probably beyond anything that we want to get into in great depth here. But the bottom line is that if he's right, then there is so much that could be done legislatively that, you know, for good or ill, depending on which side of the aisle you're sitting on. And if he's wrong, then the Supreme Court, which is an unelected body, has much more power than the founders ever intended it to have and can do things like swing elections as it did in 2000. So it's like, you know, where do you get caught? Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Phil in Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind?
Hi. Couple thoughts here. Actually, I was on hold. I had one thought. You know, if Bush wins, I want to rethink this ban on assault weapons.
Oh, come on, Phil.
You know, I think it's meaningless anyway. I found a site on the web where you can buy a Thompson submachine gun in four parts.
Yeah.
For $1,000.
Yeah, it's meaningless and it's not meaningless. I mean, it's a beginning. It's absolutely a beginning.
Well,
what you know, I just don't get what conceivable purpose. When we lived in Atlanta, when I was writing these books about private detectives and things, my son and I actually went down to one of these shooting ranges and I fired a Thompson and Uzi, you know, a whole bunch of automatic. But they were licensed to do that. They had, you know, and it was on a firing range and all that. But what possible reason would somebody want to take something like that home with them? You know, I don't get it. I mean, I can see the toys for boys. You know, gee, this is fun. You know, I'll even cop to having done that. But why does somebody feel that they have to have a MAC-10? You know, unless they're a drug dealer. Doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. You know, the reason I call this this, it occurs to me that... You know, the media and the Republicans have been, have been overplaying the words of John Kerry. Says I voted for the bill before I voted against it, etc.
Right.
This president has said so many stupid things, such as the one I guess it was Monday at a speech. You've heard about that one, right?
You're talking about
the gynecologist.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, here you go.
You're getting out of business.
Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, a felony. But the point is...
Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah, but the point is that all you have to do, you know, any one of these groups or Kerry would just simply have to run a commercial of his words.
I don't think so. I don't think that would work, Phil, because here's the deal. He has already diffused that issue. He makes fun of himself, and he's done a very good job of this, or his speechwriters have done a very good job of this, making fun of his own inability to use the English language. And it's become now viewed, even by his opponents to some extent, viewed as just, yeah, it's just a, you know, a foible, maybe he's dyslexic
but if people heard 10 or 15 of these, don't you think they'd start scratching their head?
I don't think so. I really don't.
Oh, my God. Do we have that many stupid people in this country?
Well, see, I don't think it boils down to being inarticulate necessarily means a person's stupid, A, because I don't think George Bush is stupid, and B, whether really that's the issue. I mean, there are real issues here. This guy is taking positions, policy positions that are devastating this country, that are wiping out the middle class, that are creating a landed aristocracy in this country, that are taking us back 100 years. And those are things that really need to be discussed, not whether he can, you know, he mangles the English language, in my opinion.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Phil. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some cranky right-wing think tank that just got a million bucks from Mr. Scaife. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers for Italian airline Alitalia have begun a hunger strike to protest plans to shave 5,000 jobs. Alitalia announced on Monday that it intends to cut more than a quarter of its workforce and split into two companies to save the equivalent of $1.2 billion American dollars. The majority state-owned carrier said that if the unions do not agree to this current proposal by September 15th, the company could face liquidation. The Cub Union, which represents more than 600 ground service and maintenance workers, have announced a hunger strike and are considering blocking Alitalia's main hub in Rome. The airline has responded to the potential action, saying it could result in the immediate shutdown of the company.
In a report released on Tuesday, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office stated the U.S. federal deficit is predicted to skyrocket to a record $422 billion. Adjusted for inflation, this is the highest annual shortfall since World War II. Betsy Lender Wright, Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy, doesn't believe a deficit in general is such a bad thing.
We can run average deficits of about 2% of the gross domestic product indefinitely without it causing any drag on the economy. This is more than twice that. We're now approaching 5%. So that is definitely a dangerous level of debt that's going to hold back the growth of the economy and the ability of the federal government to spend money on anything else.
And according to Wright, the money isn't being spent on building schools, roads, and America's future infrastructure.
This deficit was wrapped up by giving large tax cuts to wealthy people and corporations who really didn't need it, and by spending a lot of money on a very messy war.
Currently, the Bush administration is borrowing $1 for every $5 it spends.
In other airline news, the pilots at U.S. Airways have voted against putting a management-backed cost-cutting package up for a vote. The package would have asked for $295 million in concessions from the pilots in an attempt to cut annual labor costs by $800 million. If a solution is not found by September 15th, the airline could be forced to file for bankruptcy a second time or liquidate its assets. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The wage gap between CEOs and their workers has once again begun to rise after 2 years of narrowing. United for a Fair Economy reports that the CEO pay to worker pay ratio reached 301 to 1 in 2003, up from 282 to 1 in 2002. UFE also reports that if the national minimum wage kept pace with the increase of CEO pay since 1990, it would be at $15.76 per hour, not the current $5.15 per hour.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning.
And welcome back.
September the 11th. Danger. Doom. Danger. Doom. Killers. Be afraid. Evil. The world will drift toward tragedy.
Yeah.
Tragedy. May God bless you.
Good old George's convention
Iraq,
speech.
Afghanistan and Iraq. Evil. Darkness. God. The continuing danger of terror.
Oh, enough, George. Enough. 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Is he
God,
still at it?
Yeah, he's, we are staying he's on the offensive.
Oh, my goodness. It's George W. Bush's convention speech. Ellen Radner of the Talk Radio News Service is with us.
And nothing will hold
George,
us back.
George, now calm down.
It's, God bless America.
He just keeps... Ellen, it's incredible. One of the folks in our chat room actually took George's speech from Thursday night that you were so kind to help us be there and put
well,
this thing out.
I really haven't spoken to you since. Did you have a good time?
Oh, I had a great time other than,
weapons,
you know...
Oops,
here we go.
September
here
the 11th. The Almighty God. Evil God. In Saddam Hussein, we saw a...
And on he goes. Anyhow, we had a wonderful time.
Where'd you sit?
I wasn't there when Bush was speaking. I was actually on an airplane flying home, but...
You went Wednesday night, didn't you, I think? One night
yeah.
You went.
Yeah. We went up and looked around. So, you know,
I had to sit there through the whole thing.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, I hope you're...
And I didn't have much choice because I was doing Family Net Television, which is owned by the Baptists.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's justification for medication, I'd say. You know, or at
absolutely.
Least for a good
well,
glass of wine.
Well, get your popcorn out because tonight on 60 Minutes, Ben Barnes is going to be up talking about how he supposedly got Bush into the National Guard. Well, the RNC, not to wait until he speaks, put out a four pager today in small print about how he was a Kerry fundraiser and that he had flip flopped on this, and they're saying, who is Ben Barnes, a deep-pocketed Kerry partisan who can't keep his story straight? Well, God forbid they should have done this with the Swift Boat vets. They didn't do that.
Yeah, in other words, these guys are killing the messenger before the messenger even opens his mouth, and John Kerry took, what, 19 days or something to say anything?
That is correct. The other thing is, of course, the president today, he had a small little meeting at the White House before he left for Florida to deliver his $2 billion check and use what precious first responder resources that Florida has to deal with the hurricane for his security. But in any case, today, before he left, he also would not refused to really deal with the fact of what the vice president said about Kerry and 9/11 yesterday.
Yeah.
So Bush is just totally avoiding that. I think he's going to be asked about it and asked about it, and I think at some point they're going to have to respond because it was pretty irresponsible. Also today, the Committee on Government Affairs, chaired by Susan Collins of Maine, your next-door neighbor up there in Vermont, said that she... The committee was in. This was has to do with the whole issue of having a separate CIA director and whether Porter Goss would be the right one, et cetera. Well, the current CIA director, the acting McLaughlin, was very okay on terms of directors of the CIA and all that, except when Senator Levin asked him about the issue that in 1998 the CIA had declared, Tenet had declared a war on terrorism, but asked about specific budget issues, all of that in terms of the war, all of a sudden McLaughlin couldn't remember anything.
Hmm.
Then the issue came as to what parts of the Senate budget should, I mean, sorry, the CIA budget should be declassified. And essentially they say, well, Tom Clancy knows what the intelligence budget is. Why isn't it public? Everybody sort of knows.
It's an open secret,
well,
yeah.
They said it should. The top line should be declassified, but not the line items.
Sure. Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, I actually I don't have a big problem with that, except I think we should get a little more of an outline of it than just the top line.
I think Congress, certainly our elected representatives, should see it. My concern is that 80% of the total defense budget is not under the control of the Director of Central Intelligence,
but instead it's
under the control of the Secretary of Defense, who sits in the cabinet with the president and basically is the president's right-hand man. And if the Department of Defense, which has the power to make war, controls 80% of the budget that determines whether or not we're going to go to war, then I think we've got a problem, and I think we're seeing that right now in Iraq.
For sure. One other interesting thing that came up at the hearing today is the question of the Patriot Act. And apparently Bush signed an executive order just a few days ago setting up a panel to look at whether the Patriot Act essentially oversteps its bounds, whether it should be scaled back. Well, that report, Tom, is going to the director of the Justice Department. And, of course, the Justice Department is responsible for overseeing the Patriot Act. So, I mean, what good does that do?
Can you spell fox and hen house?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah.
Little update. Tomorrow, Colin Powell is going to be before the Foreign Relations Committee talking about Saddam. There's going to be some stuff on the prison tomorrow and also visa policy as it relates to the 9/11 Commission.
Yeah. Well, that's a good wrap-up. Let me just real quickly here play Cheney's clip. I'd like to get your take on what you think he was saying, because I've heard all these news commentators saying, oh, he really wasn't saying if you vote for the Democrats, you're all going to die. He was really saying that there's a lot at stake here, something like that. Here's the clip.
It's absolutely essential that 8 weeks from today, on November 2nd, we make the right choice. Because if we make the wrong choice, then the danger is that we'll get hit again, that we'll be hit in a way that it'll be devastating from the standpoint of the United States.
And, you know, and on he goes.
Well, my favorite expression is a 10-pound robin fat. And the fact is that he clearly is trying to state very directly, not even subliminally like the crosses on the podium, that if you vote for Kerry, we're going to get hit again. I don't think you need to be a rocket science to figure that one out.
Yeah, I mean, my takeaway from the entire convention was vote for us or die. I mean, that was just the message over and over and over again, you know, vote for us or die. And that was just so very, very clear. I mean, it was just
the 11th danger, doom, danger.
That's,
doom,
you know, George.
Be afraid.
And on it goes, you know. Anyway, so how do you think this is going to shake out? You think he's going to avoid it?
Well, I think that the president is going to avoid trying to deal with what Cheney said. They already put people on CNN today and Fox to try and sort of say that, you know, Cheney really wasn't saying what he did say, that he's talking about security of the country. I mean, the spinners are already out spinning.
Do you think, Ellen, that it's possible that he intentionally said this so that he could intentionally backpedal from it, so that it would control the news cycle for a couple of days, and even though they retracted the message got out there?
Oh, well, first of all, they haven't totally retracted the message. But secondly, yes, the message got out there, and it's exactly like when some person makes an opening or closing, a lawyer makes an opening or closing argument in a courtroom, knowing that the judge will say, strike that, or a question that they say, strike it to the jury, so the jury supposedly doesn't hear it, but the jury does hear it. It's implanted in their mind.
Right. So you don't think that this was an accident on Mr. Cheney's part? I'm of the opinion it wasn't. He's too deliberate in my mind.
There is absolutely nothing that they say between now and November 2nd that is an accident, unless it truly is a slip of the tongue with a four-letter word or something.
Yeah, or, you know.
And even then, it may not be.
Yeah, well, obstetricians practicing love with their patients, that had to be a slip of the tongue. But you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Exactly.
The Bush clip. Yes. Okay, Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks so much for calling
and
updating us on what's going on. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You got it.
Thank you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 18 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in Milwaukee, Wisconsin's on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
I just wanted to add on to what you were talking about with Dick Cheney. I don't know if I haven't listened to all the shows from the convention, but did you comment about Giuliani when he said that we owe it to the victims and the families of 9/11 to vote for Bush?
Oh, I know. The whole thing was pandering over the top. I mean, it was just...
Yeah, that comment was just... I mean, that was pathetic.
Well,
I mean,
it was... It's un-American. It's the antithesis of patriotism, whatever that is. And I suppose the total antithesis would be treason. I'm not willing to say that that's treason, but it is at the very least. This is the piece that I wrote about on Common Dreams today, commondreams.org. It's destructive to our democratic process.
Right, and I thought that comment may have slipped past with all, you know, the overall theme that they had going, and I just thought, you know, we owe it to them. I mean, that just, you know, do not insult us. You know, they get so low with stuff like that. And I just wanted to mention that.
They do. Chris, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well said. Good to hear from you there in Milwaukee. Oh, so much in the news. So much in the news. Just a couple of quick things. I can set those aside here. President Bush said yesterday that this is the Daily Misleader, our lie of the day. President Bush said yesterday that because of his leadership, quote, America and the world are safer, end quote. But almost 3 years after 9/11, Osama bin Laden remains at large, while the U.S. government admits top al-Qaeda leaders are planning attacks on America from the Afghan-Pakistan border region. And now a new book confirms the president actually shifted key resources away from the fight against al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Knight Ridder reports that in his upcoming book, U.S. Senator Bob Graham disclosed that General Tommy Franks told him on February 19, 2002, 4 months after the invasion of Afghanistan, that many important resources were being shifted to prepare for a war against Iraq. Graham, who was chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee at the time, said the administration moved things like the Predator drone aircraft out of Afghanistan, even though, quote, it is crucial to the search for Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda leaders, end quote. Graham's account is consistent with reports from earlier this year. In March 2004, USA Today reported that the White House in 2002 shifted special forces off the hunt for bin Laden in Afghanistan and into preparations for an Iraq invasion. The administration also took intelligence specialists away from the Afghanistan effort to ensure Iraq was covered. And so, you know, that goes on. Now, Ben Barnes coming up tonight. 60 Minutes, as Ellen pointed out, you've got the Republican Party already on the attack against this guy, and he hasn't even opened his mouth in public yet. The former Speaker of the House in the state of Texas, Lieutenant Governor Ben Barnes, says that he regrets the role he played in getting George W. into the military. It should be interesting. Be sure to check out 60 Minutes tonight. And in fact, you know, increasingly, the records are just so obvious. Not only did George W. Bush not serve in the military through many months of his alleged service, but he covered it up, that there was family influence. You know, it just goes on. Bob Mintz, Nicholas Kristof's column in today's New York Times. Is it today? Yeah, today's New York Times. Bob Mintz, he was in that Air National Guard group down in Alabama. He says, I'm sure I would have seen him. It's a small unit. You can't go in there without being seen. It's too close to space. There's only 25 or 30 pilots there. And this guy's the UN ambassador's son who dated Trisha Nixon. He would have been memorable. Mr. Bush signed up for May of 1968 for a six-year commitment, notes Kristof, justifying the $1 million investment in training him as a pilot. But after less than 2 years, he abruptly stopped flying, didn't show up for his physical. And I would add, by the way, that was when that was the first physical where they were starting to routinely test for illegal drugs. And now we've got Kitty Kelly's new book coming out saying that George W. was still snorting cocaine when his daddy was in the White House, and he was doing it at Camp David. And he never again flew a military plane, Kristof notes. So, proven Bush did go AWOL. Americans Coming Together published this. Jim Jordan sent this thing out from the Globe Spotlight team. In February, when the White House made public hundreds of pages of President Bush's military records, White House officials repeatedly insisted that the records proved that Bush fulfilled his military commitment. But Bush fell well short of meeting his military obligation. A Globe reexamination of the record shows twice during his Guard service. First when he joined in May of 68, and again before he transferred out of his unit in mid-73 to attend Harvard Business School. Boy, guardsmen today would love to be able to go in and say, can I get out 6 months early to go to business school? Bush signed documents pledging to meet training commitments or face a punitive call-up to active duty. He didn't meet the commitments or face the punishment, the records show. The 1973 document has been overlooked in news media accounts. The 1968 document has received scant notice. 1-866-889-8894. Tom in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I have two quick thoughts. My first one being, I don't know if Kal Kerry can spin this. It's just amazing how the Republican spin machine can just, it's just amazing to me. But how can we be safer under Bush? I mean, he's got a list a mile long of things he's failed to do and things that have happened since he's taken office. I don't know how they can convince people of this. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, he gets this memo on August 6th that says Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. And what does he do? He goes on the longest vacation in the history of the American presidency, still hiding out in Florida when the hit occurs. In any case, I interrupted you, Tom. You were saying.
Well, no, it just blows my mind. I mean, it's 3 years now since we can't find Osama. We've lost a thousand dead now in Iraq, thousands injured, all these people dead. I don't feel safer. Stuff going off in Russia, Iran now, Saudi Arabia, North Korea. How in the world can these people say we're safer under these guys?
Yeah.
We're not safer. The world is a scarier place than it was 3 years ago. I'm a lot more scared than I was before. I just don't know how people buy this. They just don't even have a record to run on that. But somehow, people, my next-door neighbor, I'm voting for Bush because he's going to keep us safe. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
This blows my mind.
This is there's a long history of doing this. Hitler did the same thing, which is not to say that Bush is as evil as Hitler, but he did the same thing of attacking Austria and then going after Czechoslovakia and Poland and so on, as a way of solidifying his domestic support. Stalin, the whole Cold War, you could argue, in large part was on both the American side and the Russian side in an attempt to consolidate political power. I mean, this is nothing new, and this guy is just using terror against us for political purposes, in my opinion. Tom, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I got to move along here. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, The Pill That Will Help You Escape the Matrix.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On
September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A study of colonial farmers in New England reveals some careful stewards of the land. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The conventional wisdom concerning early American farmers has long been that they were hard on the land. Brian Donahue has looked into the question in his new book, The Great Meadow. Donahue says historians have held two theories about what drove people to clear the forests and exhaust the soil in New England. One has it that the sheer abundance of land prompted settlers to use up one parcel and move on to the next. Donahue is an environmental historian at Brandeis University. He says a second theory focuses on markets. It holds that early American farmers seized an opportunity to make big profits, and they turned the land and other natural resources into commodities to sell. But neither explanation stands up to Donahue's investigation. He researched tax rolls, probate records, and other information on land ownership and productivity around Concord, Massachusetts during the 17th and 18th centuries. His conclusion? Early American farmers practiced what we'd now call sustainable agriculture. Donahue found the same families farming the same pieces of land for generation after generation, and he could find no evidence that they were degrading it. What he found instead was that they had carefully and intelligently adapted the mixed husbandry they brought from England to the New England landscape. They raised livestock and collected manure to use as fertilizer. They managed woodlots and hay meadows for long-term productivity. It was a system that had worked well for hundreds of years in England, and Donahue says the colonial farmers made it work for many generations after coming to America. He says damage to the land occurred much later, when market forces overwhelmed this community-oriented system of farming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Well, that's a funny little bit of bumper music there. Yeah, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 5 minutes before the hour. To add to the best of my recollection, writes Jeff, I'm not sure where, it's just a note here. ANG, Texas Air National Guard list, was very difficult to get on. There were a fixed number of slots available. Hence, when someone was inserted onto the list, someone else was bumped off the bottom of that list. That means that someone else had to be subject to the draft, get drafted, go to war, get wounded, or die for the person who was inserted onto the list. One of the candidates for president accepted family influence and accepted a slot knowing this. Who was bumped off that list the same day W was loaded on, and what happened to him? Wouldn't that be interesting to know? I doubt we ever will. I doubt we ever will. And we've talked here before about the debates. George, in fact, we were talking about it yesterday at some length. I forget which hour of the program, but talking about the debates and what Bush is going to do. And I was saying, you know, I think that he's going to push really hard to participate in debates where the format favors him. In fact, he's got what's his name? James A. Baker III, who was the Secretary of State under his father, who headed up the whole Florida recount thing, who bragged in Russia that he said, I'm the guy who fixed the election for George W. Bush, and is the current personal envoy to the president on the issue of resolving Iraq's debt with other nations. Baker negotiated debates in 1992 and 1988 and 1984 and back in 1980. This guy's done this before. And working with him are U.S. Trade Representative Robert Zoellick, Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour, and campaign advisors Karen Hughes and Mary Matlin. That's on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, they've got Vernon Jordan. According to the Washington Post, that's it. There's got to be more than that. But anyhow, the three debates were proposed. It looks like Bush has already backed out of one of those three, that being the town hall meeting format debate where real people would actually ask real questions of the candidates, and the candidates would have to give real answers. Instead, they're only going to go with two debates that are carefully scripted on specific topics, the first one being on domestic policy, the second one, what would have been the third one, being on international policy or foreign policy. So, as I predicted yesterday, here it is in today's Washington Post article by Mike Allen, Bush likely to bow out of one debate. Sure enough. Well, you know, the incumbent has everything to lose and very little to gain in debates, so you would expect them to take that advantage. It's the Tom Hartman program, Truth in Broadcasting, for a change.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers for Italian airline Alitalia have begun a hunger strike to protest plans to shave 5,000 jobs. Alitalia announced on Monday that it intends to cut more than a quarter of its workforce and split into two companies to save the equivalent of $1.2 billion American dollars. The majority state-owned carrier said that if the unions do not agree to this current proposal by September 15th, the company could face liquidation. The Cub Union, which represents more than 600 ground service and maintenance workers, have announced a hunger strike and are considering blocking Alitalia's main hub in Rome. The airline has responded to the potential action, saying it could result in the immediate shutdown of the company.
In a report released on Tuesday, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office stated the U.S. federal deficit is predicted to skyrocket to a record $422 billion. Adjusted for inflation, this is the highest annual shortfall since World War II. Betsy Lender Wright, Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy, doesn't believe a deficit in general is such a bad thing.
We can run average deficits of about 2% of the gross domestic product indefinitely without it causing any drag on the economy. This is more than twice that. We're now approaching 5%. So that is definitely a dangerous level of debt. that's going to hold back the growth of the economy and the ability of the federal government to spend money on anything else.
And according to Wright, the money isn't being spent on building schools, roads, and America's future infrastructure.
This deficit was wrapped up by giving large tax cuts to wealthy people and corporations who really didn't need it, and by spending a lot of money on a very messy war.
Currently, the Bush administration is borrowing $1 for every $5 it spends.
In other airline news, the pilots at U.S. Airways have voted against putting a management-backed cost-cutting package up for a vote. The package would have asked for $295 million in concessions from the pilots in an attempt to cut annual labor costs by $800 million. If a solution is not found by September 15th, the airline could be forced to file for bankruptcy a second time or liquidate its assets. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The wage gap between CEOs and their workers has once again begun to rise after 2 years of narrowing. United for a Fair Economy reports that the CEO pay to worker pay ratio reached 301 to 1 in 2003, up from 282 to 1 in 2002. UFE also reports that if the national minimum wage kept pace with the increase of CEO pay since 1990, it would be at $15.76 per hour, not the current $5.15 per hour.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I had survived two previous rounds of layoffs, and then the third round got me. They wiped out my whole department. I was forced to stop paying credit card payments. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to be rushed to the hospital for an emergency appendectomy, for which I'm not insured. How can we be the only westernized country without national health care? I can't believe that this is the best we can do. There's got to be a better way. I'm voting for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
See if this sounds familiar. A sour and rabidly partisan Vietnam vet named John O'Neill is plucked from obscurity by the Republican White House to be used as an attack dog against John Kerry. O'Neill creates a hokey citizens group as a political front for no other purpose than to pound Kerry about his war service. But the assault I'm describing is not this year's effort by O'Neill to ambush Kerry with a dummy operation he has labeled Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Rather, I'm talking about O'Neill's first tour of duty in service to a Republican president's campaign, none other than Richard Nixon's. Yes, Tricky Dick, the guy who invented our detestable modern-day politics of personal destruction, was the one who first unleashed O'Neill on Kerry way back in 1971. Kerry then was the just-returned war hero who was so eloquently speaking out and helping turn public opinion against Nixon's expanding war. So Tricky Dick decided to try killing the messenger through a nasty personal attack on Kerry. Of course, a president can't be seen doing such dirty work himself, so Nixon's top political hatchet man, the infamous Chuck Colson, recruited O'Neill specifically to make the hit on Kerry. Back then, O'Neill called his front group Vietnam Veterans for a Just Peace. But it was the exact same kind of negative scam he's fronting today. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's unclear whether George W. has personally met with O'Neill to urge him on, as Nixon did in 1971, but it's clear that the Bush political operation and funding network is behind O'Neill's smear campaign. Not only is the truth of this coming out, but so is the hilarious knee-slapping irony of watching George trying to shuck and jive around the smear. Since Bush can't even produce proof that he showed up for his National Guard duty in Mississippi, he shouldn't be trying to spit on the 5 medals that Kerry earned in combat.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Wow.
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I guess, depending on where you are in the country, the time may vary, but 60 Minutes, CBS television. Ben Barnes is going to be spilling his guts. Already the Republicans are attacking him. Already. He hasn't even opened his mouth yet. You know, why couldn't the Democrats, the first day John O'Neill was out with his so-called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, point out that John O'Neill had been hired by Chuck Colson, who was in charge of dirty tricks for Richard Nixon, back in 72 to create a phony front group organization called Vietnam Veterans for a Just Peace to spread lies about John Kerry back then, when Kerry was the president of Vietnam Veterans Against the War. Why couldn't they have pointed that out, that this guy had been a hatchet man for Richard Nixon, and now he's a hatchet man? Well, they didn't. They didn't. And because they didn't, he got to go on all kinds of TV shows and go, oh, I'm not partisan. I have nothing to do. I'm not political. And then, weeks later, it comes out that he's contributed all this money to all these Republicans all these years, and he's all funded by all these Well, the Republicans are you know, the Democrats, it seems, are sometimes playing badminton while the Republicans are playing with AK-47s. I mean, this is orders of magnitude. Republicans have already attacked Ben Barnes, and he hasn't even gone on the air yet. Therefore, it must be something interesting he's going to have to say. If you want to find out what it is, you'll have to tune into 60 Minutes tonight. It has to do with George W. not showing up for his guard. Well, actually, it has Ben Barnes' part. It just has to do with his getting into the National Guard in the first place. But I'll tell you, this is not going to influence Republicans. It's not. Or at least it's not going to influence most Republicans, because there's this mental frame that they have. He may be a bum, but he's our bum. And additionally, you've got this interesting contradictory belief that is claimed by many as a Christian belief. Of course, you find it in all religions, of believing in redemption. That is, okay, maybe he was a bum when he was a kid. Maybe he, you know, snorted cocaine and smoked pot and drank and ran around and, you know, drunk driving arrests and didn't show up for his guard service and, you know, used his family's name. Maybe he was a ne'er-do-well when he was young. But we believe in the power of people to redeem themselves. And I don't want to put that down. I believe in the power of people to redeem themselves too. That is, in fact, the great arc of literature. A good story is always about a person who undergoes a transformation. But these same people are aggressively trying to prevent anybody who has ever served a sentence for a felony, and then after they've paid their debt to society, they have redeemed themselves, they are out of jail, they are off probation, they are now full members of society, trying to prevent them from voting. We believe in redemption, they say, when it comes to George W. Bush, but not when it comes to somebody who might be a minority, as the majority of these prisoners who are being purged from the voting rolls. Ohio just did it recently. Florida's doing it. They're trying to do it. And many other states. You've got Republican secretaries of state organizing these voter purges. Now, then they don't believe in redemption. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. TomHartman.com, the website. You can, Kevin, rant, yes. You can drop into our chat room and benefit from the collective wisdom of some of the smartest people on the Internet. I know I frequently benefit from their wisdom. And if you'd like to call, 866-889-8894. Scott in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Almost too much to summarize in just a couple of minutes, but I'm calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I was at the New Mexico State Fair yesterday, because it was $2 Tuesday, which is about, you know, the only way I can afford that, with my family, and we were walking up and down Main Street at the New Mexico State Fair, and of course there was a Republican Party booth where you could register to vote, and there was a Democratic Party booth where you could register to vote. And so for the rest of the day, with carry stickers all over ourselves and our children, we were walking up and down Main Street, and it was so difficult for me. I think I'm echoing an earlier caller who just can't believe that his neighbor is voting for George Bush based on national security. It was very difficult for me not to just immediately start heckling the Bush supporters. And, you know, you've often talked about this, trying to find like a healthy outlet for that kind of anger. And I just got so fed up with each Viva Bush sticker I saw that, you know, I finally went to johncarry.com, volunteer now, and signed up. The radical act of volunteering at my local carry office to try to do something other than shake my head and want to scream.
Well, there you go, Scott. I mean, that, you know, the old saying, success is the best revenge, right?
Right.
It's true. It's true. If you know, it's although, frankly, I think, you know, the other old saying, and I forget who said it, that, you know, revenge is always the bitterest fruit, is also true. You know, success has its own inherent virtues. So.
Well, you know, and that's interesting. That was the one other thing I wanted to talk about, which was I heard a very interesting interview today. It was on Fresh Air, actually. She's had a bunch of very interesting interviews leading up to the election. She had Brzezinski on, who not Brzezinski from the administration of I can't even remember now.
Carter.
But, not the big new, but the guy who's written Fortress America, who has a front page article, the cover article in Mother Jones, talking about item by item what you spend in Iraq versus what we need to spend over here when you're talking about bricks and mortar national security. And the reason I bring that up is the other interview that I just heard was with the guy who's written Bush's Brain about Karl Rove.
Yeah.
And Rove's basic strategy is don't attack your opponent at their weakness.
Attack them at their strength. Right, yeah. That's not just Rove's. I mean, that's well known. That's just common sense in politics.
Well, but that Rove has kind of taken it to this whole other level where his only real ideology is to win.
Yeah, that's the difference. This is what I wrote this article about that's on today on commondreams.org today, is that they are willing not only, you know, attack his him at his strength, but be willing to lie in order to do it, to distort reality in order to do it, in order to, you know, to twist the truth in order to do it, and that's different from past campaigns. And in the past, there's been at least some sense of ethics.
Right, and I think that you know, that his whole MO is to just personally slander whomever he's up against on any grounds. And so now I find myself wanting to go after Bush at what supposedly is his strength, which is national security. And I feel like the only way to sort of break through all the sort of national media camouflage of all that crap is to do it door to door, is to like talk to people who actually may be on the fence, which I also can't believe, and say, wait a minute, you know, let's look at national security. What, you know?
Well, are you going to do it, Scott? Are you going to go door to door? Are you going to canvass?
Yeah, I mean,
hey, will you report back to us and let us know what happens
when you get onto the volunteer? What, you know, the John Kerry volunteer, and believe me, you know, I have plenty of problems with a lot of John Kerry, but it's like, you know, you've got to poop or get off the pot. I mean,
yep.
You got to start somewhere.
And, yeah, Scott, when you go out, when you start doing this, will you please call into this program and let us know what's going on? Because I am so curious. I would love to know my guess about the undecided folks. My guess is that there's a lot of folks out there who simply, you've got both people working in the family. They're working sometimes two and three jobs. They don't have time even to read the newspaper. They catch the news, you know, in the 3 minutes at the top of the hour on the radio as they're driving to work, and that's their exposure to the planet. I mean, that's all they know about, and they may genuinely be undecided because they just haven't, you know, the election's still a couple of months away, and they haven't figured out that it's, you know, they haven't thought that, you know, gee, I have to make a decision now, and they may, and or I might be wrong. It might be that everybody actually already has an opinion, and the people who are calling themselves undecided are just kind of, you know, weird folks or something. I'd love to find out what you discover. So can you call us and let us know?
Your report from the field, and I just want to say, and thanks for having me on for so long, but I just want to say that I guess for all those folks who end up yelling at their radio and wanting to yell at their Bush supporter neighbors, it's just felt awfully good even to get on the website and volunteer to try to take some of that anger someplace.
Yeah, amen. Well said, Scott. Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 17 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Enrique in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Enrique. No? Oh, that's line three. Hang on. That's I've punched the wrong button. There you go. Enrique.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yeah, we had a...
I know you've been on before.
Yeah, Enrique. You know, we had a Labor Day voter registration rally that our Voter Services Coalition put on, and we had Veterans for Peace there, and we had SheVotes.org and America Coming Together. All the nonpartisan groups were out there and really energized. So that was a great thing to see. Yeah. But, you know, earlier in the last hour, you were talking about George Bush's military record.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple of questions that I had about it were, you know, and he signed up in 68 for a six-year term, and then he got out in 72.
Yeah, what's wrong with this math?
Yeah.
You know, what's wrong with it is that he went to the military and said, I'd like to get out early so that I can go to Harvard graduate school, to Harvard Business School, and get an MBA and follow my daddy into the oil business with money from Osama bin Laden's brother.
Well, you know, isn't that the, you know, about the same thing as they say, well, you know, Kerry got three Purple Hearts and he got out early.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah, speaking of getting out early.
It's a little harder to do.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a lot harder to do to get shot at a couple of times.
Yeah.
To get out. Yeah.
And you know, the other thing that I had heard early on is that a pilot had to have at least 400 hours of flight time a year, or else they would be not discharged, but they would be moved on to another, you know, less cush assignment.
Yeah.
And I had seen where Bush only had 600 hours in the 4 years, and then. I think last night I was reading it was only 300 hours.
Yeah, I don't know the details of that.
How come he wasn't disciplined for that?
Yeah, you know, these are the questions that hopefully we'll find out. I mean, I've read in two reports that he actually never even soloed, and then I've read other reports that said he did. I've got to find out the truth on that, because I have said on this program that I didn't think he'd soloed based on those, and I'm going to find out and report back. But these are issues that I think are now on the table, in large part because the Republicans hired this former hitman for the Nixon administration, John O'Neill. Thanks for the call, Enrique.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More bad news from the Congressional Budget Office at the start of the Republican National Convention. According to the CBO, Bush's three major tax cuts, the last two passed even after it became clear the economy was facing a deficit, did not create the 7 million new jobs promised. They also increased the national debt and shifted more of the tax burden from the country's rich to middle-class families.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Turn the world into one big Texas. Turn the world into one big Texas.
Turn the world into one big Texas. Oh, no. Some Democrats on the Hill, this from Time Magazine, claim they are worried a second Bush administration may prove more militarily aggressive than the first. One reason, a Democratic official tells Time that a leading Pentagon hawk recently hinted that the doctrine of preemptive war could soon apply to potential new targets. This was a private August 19th conference call with aides from both parties on Capitol Hill. Senior Pentagon policy official William Lutai said there were at least 5 or 6 foreign countries with traits that, quote, no responsible leader can allow. You ready for 5 or 6 more wars? I thought that the bumper sticker, you know, George Bush, 4 more wars, was... But apparently 5 or 6 they've got in the back of their brains there. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Karen in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for being so gracious when I met you in Santa Fe. I was the one sitting in your office while you were on the line.
Oh,
on the
great.
Air.
Yeah, yeah. It was nice meeting you.
Pardon?
It was nice meeting you.
Thank you. What I wanted to say is, did you hear the speech that Kerry gave this morning in Cincinnati?
I don't think so, no.
It's wonderful. Really
great.
Tough.
Great.
And he talks about Iraq, and he also talks about how the money's going the wrong place, that all the money going into Iraq could have been helping America. It was a really tough speech.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to dig around for some clips to it. The last couple hours before I go on the air, I'm usually up to my eyebrows in show prep here and not.
Yeah.
Not,
okay. Well, this was. I guess he started talking around 8 o'clock in the. Well, that's my time, Santa Fe time.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I heard last night on one of the cable news shows. Unfortunately, I can't remember who it was. Possibly Chris Matthews, but I'm not sure. Who said that Al Qaeda wrote a letter or set out information that they would like to see George Bush reelected because he's such a maniac?
That was quite some time ago. That was six, eight months ago. Yeah, I talked about it on the air for a whole week.
And I listen to you all the time. How did I miss that?
I don't know. It was one of these Al Qaeda rants in which they said that John Kerry was a weasel who couldn't be trusted. He would try to turn the whole world against Al Qaeda, something to that effect. Whereas George Bush would declare a holy war and that would help them recruit and blah blah.
Yeah, it helps their recruitment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to tell people too what I've been doing. Is I went and picked up a lot of registration, and I carried around my car.
That's a good idea.
Everybody I meet, I ask them if they're registered, and I have all my buttons on.
Yeah.
You know, Kerry Edwards.
Great.
And I try to sign them up.
Good. Good. Good on you, Karen. And thank you for calling. Thanks for sharing that. I'll look for that speech. I'll check around. And thanks for and it was great meeting you. And my greetings to your husband, the actor, as I recall. And great meeting you in Santa Fe. In fact, apparently, my being in Santa Fe last week was well received. Holly in Santa Fe is on the line now. Hey, Holly, welcome.
Yeah, hey, Tom. I was just going to say, we obviously love you here in Santa Fe.
Well, I have a high affection for Santa Fe, too.
Yeah. I heard Amy Goodman say yesterday, and I was watching this as well, that the protests in New York City, where it was the largest ever peaceful protest.
On Sunday.
In the United States, I imagine, or in the world, who knows. And I was, watching the Republican National Convention and listening to the radio during that whole period, and from where I stood, I didn't see any coverage. I didn't see any TV coverage of any of the protests. There might have been some, but I don't even recollect a flash of an image of the people protesting.
The big protest was the Sunday before the convention. During the convention, I mean, Louise and I were walking around that area during the convention, and there were protests, and some of them ran, six, eight blocks long, but they weren't huge like the one that was Sunday. And that Sunday one was well covered, as far as I could tell. I mean, I'm just telling you what I was seeing.
Yeah. I guess my question was, to what degree do you know that the media actually covered the protests?
Oh, I think they did a very poor job of covering them, and part of it was just logistical. I mean, just getting out there, everybody wanted to be inside to find out what was going on with the conference, and there should have been more coverage of the protests. I absolutely agree.
Yeah,
Holly, thanks for the call. We got to boogie along.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers for Italian airline Alitalia have begun a hunger strike to protest plans to shave 5,000 jobs. Alitalia announced on Monday that it intends to cut more than a quarter of its workforce and split into two companies to save the equivalent of $1.2 billion American dollars. The majority state-owned carrier said that if the unions do not agree to this current proposal by September 15th, the company could face liquidation. The Cub Union, which represents more than 600 ground service and maintenance workers, have announced a hunger strike and are considering blocking Alitalia's main hub in Rome. The airline has responded to the potential action, saying it could result in the immediate shutdown of the company.
In a report released on Tuesday, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office stated the U.S. federal deficit is predicted to skyrocket to a record $422 billion. Adjusted for inflation, this is the highest annual shortfall since World War II. Betsy Lender Wright, Communications Director of United for a Fair Economy, doesn't believe a deficit in general is such a bad thing.
We can run average deficits of about 2% of the gross
domestic product. Did you just have a beep from your power supply?
Definitely, without it causing any drag on the economy. This is more than twice that. We're now approaching 5%. So that is definitely a dangerous level of debt. That's going to hold back the growth of the economy and the ability of the federal government to spend money on anything else.
And according to Wright, the money isn't being spent on building schools, roads, and America's future infrastructure.
This deficit was wrapped up by giving large tax cuts to wealthy people and corporations who really didn't need it, and by spending a lot of money on a very messy war.
Currently, the Bush administration is borrowing $1 for every $5 it spends.
In other airline news, the pilots at U.S. Airways have voted against putting a management-backed cost-cutting package up for a vote. The package would have asked for $295 million in concessions from the pilots in an attempt to cut annual labor costs by $800 million. If a solution is not found by September 15th, the airline could be forced to file for bankruptcy a second time or liquidate its assets. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The wage gap between CEOs and their workers has once again begun to rise after 2 years of narrowing. United for a Fair Economy reports that the CEO pay to worker pay ratio reached 301 to 1 in 2003, up from 282 to 1 in 2002. UFE also reports that if the national minimum wage kept pace with the increase of CEO pay since 1990, it would be at $15.76 per hour, not the current $5.15 per hour.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend.
Yeah, John Kerry, apparently, back in the saddle again. Jimson Weed, good old Jimson Weed. Yeah, maybe you remember the Firesign Theater takeoff on that from, I think we're all bozos on this bus. Ah, we don't need to go there. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The head spokesman for the Army Reserve in the state of West Virginia, a fellow by the name of Colonel Lou G. Tyree, has come out and said in public the Iraqi war was a mistake and George Bush should be voted out of office. He said, and I quote, "I feel we were not told the truth. I do not think we should be there. America is in more danger now because we are using up a tremendous amount of human resources, our soldiers. We tend to ignore that we are well over 1,000 dead and well over 7,000 injured. We use many of the soldiers time and time again. Where are the replacements going to come from? We're getting reenlistments, but not recruits. Where's the strength for defending this country in another arena?" He's, concerned that he's running out of bodies. But, well, yeah, that's his business, is to ship them over there. So the colonel says his troops in Iraq wondered what they were doing there, and he was forced to change his answer repeatedly. "An invasion must have a clear mission and an exit strategy, but those things don't exist in the Iraq attack," he said. At first, Tyree said, he trusted Secretary of State Colin Powell's assertion that Iraq possessed illicit weapons of mass destruction, but that pretext soon faded, and the next reason for the war was to liberate the Iraqis from tyranny. Later he heard, quote, "We were there to gain a foothold in the region," end quote. But he felt that he couldn't tell that reason to his troops, so he went back to the liberation mission. Speaking about the Bush administration, Tyree, this, again, West Virginia's top Army Reserve spokesman, "Shaking the saber at someone is not the approach to world diplomacy. It's extremely important that we bring other countries back to the table to work on peaceful solutions. We can't bring them to the plate under the current administration. We have to show them that we are willing to change this administration and come back to the table as part of the world community." And he added, he can't understand veterans who, quote, "continue to support a leader who would lead us in this direction with these kinds of miscalculations." Well, that's a gentle word. Of course, that's George Bush's own word, that he had miscalculated in Iraq. Yes, we miscalculated. 1,000 people, 1,000 of our soldiers are dead. 20,000, 30,000 Iraqi civilians are dead. We miscalculated. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Lauren in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Lauren, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was inspired to call by listening to the gentleman who called who was looking for a place for his moral outrage to go.
Yes.
And volunteered for CARI headquarters. I've been working there for about a month doing phone calls. And we work from a database that tells us who the last person was they voted for in the previous election. And it was one of those calls that I always cringe before I make because this person had voted for Bush.
Mm-hmm.
I dialed the number, I got the lady of the household, and introduced myself and, you know, asked her if she had been thinking about perhaps changing her vote this year. And she said, well, you know, I feel like I have to support Bush because I have a son and a daughter in Iraq. And I said, well, you need to know John Kerry is a veteran, and that's a fact. And we spoke for a while about the issues of the type of equipment that the soldiers have and that they got substandard safety equipment, and that this is something everyone's worried about and is really kind of a nonpartisan issue, that soldiers are out there without really knowing that they've been shortchanged.
Yeah, we do not have, although the Bush and Cheney would want you to think we do not have an anti-soldier political party in the United States right now, to the best of my knowledge.
Yes, exactly. But we seem to be sort of forcing that on the soldiers that are over there.
Yeah.
And as I was talking to this woman, I didn't even use the script that they provide us with, and I just talked about the very human issue of how it must feel like to know that her children are over there and they're not being kept as safe as possible. And I'd already memorized the part of the script that we use when we try and convince people to change their vote about Halliburton's money that was supposed to feed and take care of safety equipment and all this stuff to take care of our soldiers, and that it didn't go there.
Yeah.
And she said, I didn't know that. And I said, well, you know, it's hard to keep yourself up to date when every day you're living your life, you're waiting to get that horrible phone call or have someone show up at your door.
Mm.
And I said, so I'd really like you to consider staying on top of the issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she said, well, I guess, she said, after talking to you, I guess I'm kind of undecided now.
Yeah.
And we spoke for a while longer, completely off script, just about the nature of politics right now.
Yeah.
And she said, you know what, I'm going to have to think very hard because I'm really not sure now that I can vote for Bush, and maybe I need to vote against him.
Yeah, well done, Lauren. Well done.
Well,
I mean,
and
it was script or no script.
I mean, we'll make 20 phone calls, and the people moved 20 years ago, and we very rarely connect with people. And
yeah,
I mean, I got up and was running around the headquarters, woo, you know, and was absolutely thrilled. And
But even beyond the kind of I made a sale part of it, is this really tragic reality that you just highlighted for all of us, of the fact that there are probably close to 200,000 parents in the United States who are, you know, or 300,000 if you figure two parents for every child, who are dreading that phone call.
Yeah.
That knock on the door, who mm-hmm. are living in fear of it. We have a family just around here in Vermont. I mean, we've had, in the last 2 years, we've had two murders in this state and two people killed, both cases by family members. We've had 9 soldiers die in Iraq.
Yep.
And
we crossed the 1,000
yeah,
body mark.
And it's, you know, just down the street from us, there's a family whose husband is in Iraq. He's a state policeman, and he was in the reserves, and boom, he's over in Iraq, and there's the yellow ribbon on the tree, and every day we walk by, and, you know, it reminds us of that. Anyhow, Lauren, thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing that story with us. I do appreciate it.
Well, can I emphasize one thing
Certainly.
To any of your listeners that
Certainly.
Are working in headquarters and talking to people, is that know what's in your script, but speak from your heart.
There you go. Well said. Lauren, thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dan in White River Junction, Vermont on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Well, this is a couple things I wanted to mention. Yesterday, I think in the first hour, you started to go into ADD stuff, and I haven't read many of your books on the topic, but you mentioned how you know it could be responsible for a lot of what we take for granted, civilization, I guess, what you're starting to say.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, have you done any work with Asperger's syndrome?
I haven't, other than knowing what it is and actually knowing a couple people with it. Have you read the book, Diagnosing Jefferson?
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that, that Jefferson had it, and Isaac Newton supposedly had it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not what I was going to call about.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I was going to call about is the idea of outsourcing and globalism and stuff. And I'm sort of split on the issue because on one side I'm sort of want to go into the field of technology and I like to think that if I study, get a major in computer science or something, then I can maybe get a job that's not in India. But on the other side, do you ever feel like it's just it's a trend? I mean, we got the internet, we've got probably going to be faster modes of transportation, we've got sort of a global village now, so to speak. And is it going to reach the point where it's where there's just not enough sort of protectionism to make it so that our own domestic industries don't have to adapt to a new economy?
To some extent, yeah. To some extent, certainly, Dan, particularly with intellectual property, particularly with things like call centers and stuff like that, it's difficult. But the overarching concept that the American people really understood in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 1960s, the 1970s, and they really started disintegrating in the 80s when Reagan and conservative economics really came to ascendancy, mm-hmm. is that there's a whole bunch of different raw materials that go to make any product, whether it's a physical product or an intellectual product, or whether it's a product or a service, ultimately. And those raw materials include, goods, intellectual components, and human labor. And that historically we have said the human labor component of something is sacrosanct. It's separate. We're going to treat it differently because that's us.
Right.
And the whole point of doing business is not just to allow one or a few people who own the business to get rich. I mean, that's a fine thing, we're not opposed to that. But the main reason why we allow the game of business in our society is because ultimately we want it to benefit society, mm-hmm. which means providing employment for people.
Excuse me.
No, that's go ahead.
What?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say. Well, yesterday you were talking about how we. If I recall correctly, how we import more labor or import finished products rather than
that's right,
raw materials.
And in the process we're importing labor. Which is functionally competing with our existing labor, which is why you have so many people who are unemployed right now or underemployed.
That's true. Now, if we do you think that we could exist better in a global marketplace? With if we tried to switch that around.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I think all the countries of the world would really. Everybody's getting it that this neocon idea of absolutely free boundaries, free borders, so-called free trade, it works marvelously for the profits of multinational corporations,
right.
And it's absolutely destroying, absolutely devastating the middle class of the nations of the wealthier nations, and it's actually devastating the poor of the third world nations. It is. Not a healthy thing for the planet. It's not a healthy thing for our ecosystems.
Yeah.
It's not a healthy thing for human beings, and it's not working. I got to move along, Dan. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Esther in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Esther, what's up?
Hi. I heard your earlier call with, I believe it was Lauren, and she volunteers at the Democratic headquarters, and this was kind of in response to your question about the undecided voters,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of them just are refusing to tell who they're going to vote for right now.
Yeah.
And some of them, I think it's because it's Bush and they just don't want to admit it.
Oh, that's an interesting theory. They're embarrassed. They're ashamed. But if that's the case,
because I volunteered also, and I've been making calls, and a lot of people just refuse to answer the question, and a lot of them just say, "Well, I'm just going to stick with Bush." Yeah. But you get a whole lot of them, too, who still say, well, I just haven't decided yet.
Don't you think, that in America there really is this, and perhaps unique among nations, there's this sense that privacy is an important thing, and we're losing so much of it with the conservative assault on our privacy, the new laws that were passed during the Bush administration giving insurance companies the right to resell our names and addresses and on it goes. You know, the banks can now pass out our information. The Homeland Security Department can get our private information.
Well, it's everything. I took my son to the pediatrician, and I had to fill out a form releasing all his information, and I thought, well, who is getting this information?
Right. Anybody who wants to pay for it. Any corporation that wants to pay for it. And that's the thing. Don't you think that a lot of people are just reacting to that and saying,
I agree.
I want privacy.
Even when I get calls, I refuse to answer a lot of questions over the telephone.
Yeah. So there you go. There you go. But
I think there are fewer undecided ones. They just don't want to tell us.
Yeah.
But
I suspect
there are
you're
also
right.
Those who I think are still upset with their own decision to vote for Bush again.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that they change their mind.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears. Thank you, Esther. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I've also been out doing canvassing, and it's been interesting. I haven't done it for about a month now. I was doing it just before the primary here in Colorado. And I found oftentimes with Republicans there would be some hostility at first.
Mm-hmm.
But then there would be somewhat an apologetic tone that happened, that they were apologizing for being Republicans and saying for the first time ever, and this is the majority of cases, not all, that they're thinking about voting another way.
Oh, that's interesting. This was a door-to-door, face-to-face canvassing?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I was, working on a campaign for the Senate candidate here in Colorado.
Yeah.
And we were just talking. They're just saying they're dissatisfied with the Republicans, but there was a general embarrassment that was happening. And one of the things I found in getting people to talk is to try to ask a question on a key issue. Are you aware of this? And then presenting some simple facts, not opinions at all.
Yeah.
And they go, "Wow, I wasn't." And I find most voter people, even those who are very open-minded and so forth, most people are just simply uneducated. The media is not telling us what's going on.
Well, and to a large extent, neither are the campaign advertisements. And this is,
yes,
you know, one of my concerns is that they're not getting. We need to be shoveling information at people like this. It's.
One of the key things we found, like this flip-flop thing, where that got stuck on Kerry.
Yeah.
Is finding those key words you can use, and I think that one of the key words we can use on the Bush thing is betrayal.
Yeah.
It's amazing how effective that word can be.
Yeah, and it really has been done to us. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear
from you.
Thanks, you too. And 1-866-889-8894. David in Santa Fe. We got about a minute and a half left here, David. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I met you briefly in Santa Fe, and it was great to hear you.
Thank you.
What I'm concerned about is it seems that Bush, Cheney, and their supporters, and most of the American public, have forgotten who was president in 9/11.
Yeah, yeah. On whose watch did this thing happen?
Elect the Democrats and we'll have more. Elect the Republicans and we'll have more. They're the ones who was watched. Well, I guess they're still blaming it on Clinton.
Well, that's the thing. They've on the one hand, you know, they want to take credit for anything that's positive that has happened, although there's been so very little of it that they haven't been doing much credit taking. But on the other hand, anything that's bad that's happened, it was all Bill Clinton's fault, and they're trying to create this collective amnesia.
I would love to see MoveOnAll have an ad saying President Bush wants you to know that 9/11 happened on his watch, and so does Giuliani. And if you reelect them, we'll probably have more 9/11.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope not. David, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Good to hear from you. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing state swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the billionaire!
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
A magnetic compass is the oldest and sometimes most important piece of navigational equipment on board most ships. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Alan Gurney begins his new book, Compass, with the story of a brand new yacht on its maiden voyage in 1998. The luxurious boat bristled with computerized navigational equipment, but Gurney says the electronic systems went dead the first night at sea, and there was no magnetic compass on board.
So there they were, stuck on this high-tech yacht with this great array of screens and batteries and keyboards, all like a James Bond movie, and they didn't know where the hell they were sailing.
Gurney, a former yacht designer himself, says the boat eventually made it back to port, but he says the wayward yacht's experience underscores our continued dependence on this simple device. Gurney traces the history of the compass from its first documented use in the year 1187. He says the device was so valued that sailors in the 1500s had a hand pinned to the mast with a dagger if they were caught messing with it, usually a magnetized needle in a bowl of water. Gurney says as vital as the compass was, it had its limits. The Earth's magnetic poles do not lie directly under its geographic poles, a phenomenon known as magnetic variation.
The needle points north, but it's not to true north, of course. It's to magnetic north. And it took centuries before people realized that magnetic north changes. And also, if you're sailing up in the high latitudes in the Arctic and you're getting closer to the north magnetic pole, the pull of the magnetic field tends to make the needle very skittish.
The problem of magnetic variation was solved in the 18th century with the help of the astronomer Edmund Halley. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nasty Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. U.S. Coordinator on Counterterrorism Ambassador Jay Kofor Black expected on Friday that Osama bin Laden and his collaborators could be arrested at any time. This according to the Daily Times of Pakistan, biggest newspaper in Pakistan. Bin Laden going to be arrested any minute now. Just you wait. And they're quoting our ambassador. Remarkable. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Bill in New York City on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I just recently got an email from a friend regarding the bombing of the Pentagon on 9/11. And this is something I never even thought about, and I'm not even sure if you've covered it on your show. But is it true that it's possible that it was not an airline that rammed itself into the Pentagon, but a possible missile? And if that's true, why hasn't the general public been notified of it? I've seen photographs of the Pentagon photos of the missiles supposedly that have gone through three layers of the Pentagon.
Yeah, five layers, yeah. It's interesting. My brother yesterday emailed me probably the same link. I think it's going around really fast right now. It takes you to a flash presentation that runs about or 5 minutes long that has all these photos and things. And yeah, it's in fact, I if I had the website right here, I'd give it on the air. I'll do that tomorrow, unless you know it off the top of your head.
Yes, actually, I do have it.
Okay, is it short?
That website is, here we go. It's it's a long one. www.elcahulo.net/files/.
No one's gonna find it. Nobody can write that fast. No one's gonna find
okay.
it.
Okay.
So, what we'll do is post it on our go to our message board and just post it there. And if you can't, I will. So people can click off it. But in any case, it raises some interesting questions. I mean, we know that the people had called from the flights that were going into the towers. We know that people made phone calls from the flight in Pennsylvania. I've never heard of anybody making a phone call from the flight going into the Pentagon.
That's right. And not only that,
but maybe they have.
There hasn't been any recovery of any airplane parts from the Pentagon crash, nor any luggage or body parts.
I know. It's just all very strange. We'll see.
Okay.
Bill, the issue's out there. I don't think it's going to go away. Just like, who killed Kennedy is still out there. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us, to Mike Toth for our archives internal, and Ben for our archives at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.